Thank you for joining with us for another episode of Morning Briefings here on the Pipeline Intercession for the President and on our podcast. If you have any dreams that you have about the Office of the President, please send them to pip@christiancenterstreetport.com. We're so thankful that you all have joined in with us on this prayer journey, and we look forward to standing with you not only today, but in the days ahead. So with that, we'll go ahead and join today's broadcast as we talk about the news and stand on the wall for this nation and the Office of the President. Good morning, everyone. Zach R. Skadden coming to you live from North Carolina. And today, I want it to be a more relaxed day. Not too much going on in the news, other than a few minor things that, you know, we continuing to follow new updates, especially with the announcement of the resignation from Breyer off of the Supreme Court. And I want to then end, and I want to preface this to hopefully make sure you guys stick around, of the end of some economic policy decisions that have been made in the past to get us out of similar situations that we're in right now. And hopefully start to explain a little bit why certain decisions are being made now and the possible other decisions that could be made to help ease economic pains now that not only the private sector has gotten itself into, but also the federal government has put us in as well. And some of the, hopefully understanding some of the disastrous decisions that have been made over the previous generations and moving forward, of understanding the importance of electing officials and we ourselves as the electorate, understanding why certain decisions matter from those in office. So with that, let's keep our emotions in check. Remind ourselves that we're here to pray for the office of the president so that we can have the freedom to be able to spread the gospel of the kingdom, not only in this nation, but in other nations so that souls can be saved. And with everything going on, I want to start off in the word and continuing in the verse of the week in 2 Chronicles 7:14, saying, if my people who are called by my name shall humble themselves, pray, seek, crave, and require of necessity my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven, forgive their sin, and heal their land. And with some of the announcements yesterday, this is never more prevalent than right now in the fact that with the announcement that the president will supposedly select someone to the Supreme Court based solely upon skin color and sex, being extremely discriminatory towards the qualified candidates who are out there that could very well meet those criterias, but this is going to be your number one criteria for that. It's very alarming. But I do want to talk about that a little bit. So we do know the news that Breyer has announced his retirement from the Supreme Court. For anyone paying attention and following along, this is not really a shocker because Breyer floated it out there at the end of Trump's term that he was considering this before, because he was getting there up in age. At the time, he was having some health problems. He's since recovered. He's been healthy. Good thing. Glad he's healthy. And obviously, they were, at the time, Democratic strategists were asking him to hold on for a potential of what's now, where there is a Democratic president who could then select someone to replace him who is either a Democrat or even far left wing than him. So that's the scenario on the ground. So what happened is behind closed doors, Breyer was meeting with Biden and his team, high level officials, to let him know that this came out. The reason it leaked My theory is that Biden wants to get this started sooner rather than later before the midterms. He wants a win because everything else is falling around him. Every Democratic Republican strategist are saying that this is a lifeline for him with everything going on with inflation, Ukraine, the border, supply shortages, etc. Which could that's my opinion. I think there's rumors that, you know, Breyer was upset. He was surprised by the announcement. He wanted to wait till next week. He wanted to do it on his time. And it got leaked somehow. Now, all intensive reports say that this was only a select few of people who actually knew this. So the fact that this leaked out is very alarming. NBC got the scoop on this. So there's somebody within the Biden administration. And this happens in every administration. People either get paid or gain favor, something with the media to be able to release this stuff. So it got out. And it got out. It wasn't going to change. It's not going to change the fact that Breyer's going to do this. It's been confirmed by him that yes, this is happening. He decided on his own, etc. So there's that. Now, with the fact that, and this is kind of something I probably repent of, is the president of the United States saying, even when he campaigned, that he is going to choose a replacement for the sole purpose of making sure that someone of a certain skin color and a certain sex is on the Supreme Court. Completely against any tenets that Martin Luther King Jr. would have stood for, of basing decisions based on the content of people's character, not on the color of their skin. So we understand what's going to happen with these decisions. Now, something to pay attention for, something to watch out for is that Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin are potentially going to be in play here as far as maybe blocking this till after the midterms. And really, the best thing would be is that they would hold Biden and the Biden administration's feet to the fire in making sure that they chose a more moderate Democratic judge out there. Highly unlikely that they will find that. Based upon the criteria that they're looking at, there's really only one candidate that would meet that kind of criteria, and I'll get to that here in a second because there are some names we need to know about. But the caveat is that Schumer wants to put this forward and have it done immediately. And he's looking at the Amy Coney Barrett timeline of a month, and so that's why you kind of want to keep it. If you're the president, you would want to keep it secret. You'd want to get your names put together, reviewed, put forward, and then get them approved, and then turn it around. The sooner they can get this done, the better moving into the midterms. But Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema could block this if it is not a moderate candidate. Kind of a benefit would be is that if it delays and it gets closer to the midterms, then potentially the Democratic candidates who are in purple areas and a very extremely progressive Supreme Court justice is put forward, if they go forward with it and ignore what their constituents want, they could be voted out of office. That's why Schumer really wants to get this done before, not wait till after. And all the reports lean towards Breyer is going to continue to stay on the court till after this session. In the summer, and then he'll step down and they'll appoint somebody and get things rolling. They could very well do that before. They could have an appointee ready to go now before he actually announces a retirement, which still officially hasn't happened, but all intents and purposes, it will. And so if delayed, it could throw tensions into the midterm while Democrats have a split Senate. With Kamala Harris being the tiebreaker, even Senator Lindsey Graham says that if Joe Biden puts forward a moderate judge, then all 50 Republicans are going to vote no, maybe not, and all 50 Democrats are going to vote yes, most likely. Also, Senator Lindsey Graham has said before, look, he voted for Kagan. To be on the Supreme Court because he felt like she was honest in how she was going to rule and also showed some civility. That's pretty much what they're looking for, some civility. So if you get some judge out there who's a real nutcase and is extremely, extremely biased and shows their bias, then they're not going to go forward. And that's why Merrick Garland ended up not getting pushed forward under the end of Obama's term. It's because he was extremely biased, showed his bias, and we're seeing that now, him as the AG of the United States. So, but the main caveat is that as we get towards the end of Breyer's term and the end of this term and a lot of the huge cases that have come before the Supreme Court right now, is we need to remember that the Lord can still show up. There's huge cases that could come and solidify and determine a lot of legal precedents for the future at the end of Breyer's term. So just praying about how to pray about this, intercede about this. I felt like the Lord showed me that, you know, we need to pray, intercede for Justice Breyer over the next several months to rule with the fear of the Lord before he retires. You know, he's ruled certain ways in the past for abortion. I'm not saying he will lean that way, but hey, a miracle from the Lord, Holy Spirit encounter to come touch him on this matter is not out of the realm of possibility. It may be a far-fetched hope, but hey, I'm gonna have hope that in these cases that he is ruling on, that maybe he decides to say, hey, you know what, God, come touches him, heals him. That's my hope. It's just that at the end of this term that he realizes, you know, he has a chance to be obedient to the Lord. And I don't know his relationship with the Lord, but he is more of a moderate Democratic judge. He's not like Sotomayor and Kagan. So there he has some sense of sensibility. And that's really the prayer for the end of his term. Now, getting to the replacements, some names we need to know that we'll most likely hear. Obviously, there's rumors of Kamala Harris being one of them, but the reality is there'll actually be judges who are sitting on the Supreme Court, and these come from the Hill. So I lay them out here, and a few of them I knew their ages. The first four, Brown Jackson, is being talked up as the ultimate front runner because she was recently voted in to the serve on the U.S. Court of Appeals in D.C. And Susan Collins of Maine, Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, Lindsey Graham voted with the 50 Democrats to approve her in this last June with a 53-44 vote. And the margins get smaller for the rest of them. Kruger is the youngest. So the thought would be, okay, you put somebody young. And all intents and purposes, these are all females. And these are all black women, to point that out there. Childs is a federal district court judge from South Carolina, but she's on the D.C. Court of Appeals as well, just over a month ago. Kind of the only reason she would get put in is because Representative James Clyburn out of South Carolina helped Biden win South Carolina. He's the number three Democrat in the House and possibly could have sway, could have made a deal with Biden. Who knows? She's 55, so she's younger. Sharon Eiffel works at the NAACP. Potential there. She's a little bit older than the rest of the candidates, so they're thinking maybe younger. More progressive leaning, and that's kind of the scary thing. You would want somebody who is more moderate. And also one thing, Childs actually clerked under Breyer. So if you're going to replace kind for kind, which is what they did with Gorsuch and Kavanaugh, and even similarly with some of the decision-making behind Amy Coney Barrett, the fact that she was a woman to replace Ruth Bader Ginsburg. So, all intents and purposes, if you're going to go out of these names, Childs would be the one to show that she has at least the understanding of what Breyer's thought process was in all of this. So these are the names out there. Also, rumor names, flyers, people to keep an eye out on is Circuit Judge Eunice Lee and Circuit Judge Candace Jackson Akinwumi. They're all of them except for Childs are former public prosecutors. And that's kind of the category priority that President Biden is looking for when deciding on these. And the hope would be that he picks the most moderate. That's the prayer, is that he picks the most moderate when making this decision going forward, because this will have lasting effects. This does nothing to shape the final outcome of a lot of the votes, other than the fact that Breyer was more moderate sometimes, and he would still vote for constitutional issues and vote based upon constitutional issues if his emotions didn't get the best of him. If you remember from the mask mandate case from OSHA, he let his emotions get the best of him in determining. He tried to play doctor, and that's not how the case should have been ruled. But it was of no surprise. He made jokes on the court, which were unbecoming of a Supreme Court justice. And so that's where things lie there. All right, I'm going to move on to another story. We posted in the pipeline last night something that is not being discussed a lot. It's kind of going unreported, but it's actually very crucial for the United States relationship with Israel. And there are three Biden administration negotiators who left the team that is working on the Iran nuclear deal, because they're saying Biden is being too soft on Iran in the negotiations, not holding to the reality that Iran needs to have sanctions put on them, not understanding, they understand, but the Biden administration is not understanding the realities that Iran is just using this as a delay ploy as they grow and strengthen numbers behind their Iron Curtain in Iran to develop and grow their nuclear capabilities. And Israel has said, look, if it comes to it, we are going to defend ourselves. We are going to take action. Even the new prime minister within Israel said that. And so this is something that is very, very alarming, because as you go further and you don't have this voice within the administration in talking about making decisions that are beneficial for America, we want to pray that those who are left there have the fear of the Lord and ultimately understand the biblical relationship with Israel and why we should stand with Israel, but also the natural of understanding they're literally our only ally. So we want to pray that we intercede for the Biden administration, that those who are on the negotiation team gain the fear of the Lord when dealing with Iran on the Iran nuclear deal talks. Those who bless Israel will be blessed. I mean, it's the basic principle. And so we want to make sure that we don't go down the road that we went down before of agreeing with this stuff, knowing that Iran, before they even entered into the Iran nuclear deal, before under the Obama administration, that they were breaking the promises that they said they were going to keep. And they've already broken them, and they're saying they're going to go back to something that they never actually followed. It's a conundrum that if you're using basic logic would say, hey, these are bad actors. Hey, this is bad faith negotiating. Hey, let's make decisions that are based upon reality and how and understanding who we're dealing with. Not just, oh yeah, we signed this on a piece of paper. This looks good. Yeah, we locked them down. Yeah, we made sure they're not able to do this stuff, when in reality that's not the case. Okay. Very, very, very important issue there to watch for. Now, one of the last things I want to point to and talk about before I close out is there is an audio. I'm not going to play it because I don't know the legal ramifications of this. I don't know if the person who actually recorded this and put this out will potentially get in trouble, but there is leaked audio. I will give you the link to where you, if you want to go listen to it. The audio is 40 minutes long. It's not the best. It's very choppy because it sounds like somebody recorded it on their phone or something. I did listen to several minutes of it. And the key points out of this are, and the audio is from a meeting that Department of Homeland Security Secretary Mayorkas had with Border Patrol agents. And the Border Patrol agents were not happy and just put it that way. They're upset that they're not given the resources to be able to actually patrol the border. They're upset that they're being assigned to basically fulfilling immigrants processing as they cross the border. Meanwhile, if they're doing that, that means they're not patrolling the border. They don't have enough, again, resources to supply these things. And there were several agents who got extremely, extremely upset. And Mayorkas did not handle it well at all. Rather than hearing them out saying, hey, we're working on this, hey, we're doing this, he went towards, well, you don't know what I've done. You don't know what I'm doing. You don't know. You don't know. You don't know. Not being humble. Not trying to hear her out, not trying to see what needs to happen and actually do something about it. It was just being extremely defensive, being extremely prideful. And this is very alarming because there are problems at the border. Talked about it earlier this week. There were 14 known people on a terrorist watch list who got caught crossing the border illegally. Now that's who we know. What about the people we don't know? What about the people they caught in the Northeast who were on terrorist watch lists? Where did they come from? Crossing the border, the increasing of fentanyl being crossed across the border, three times almost as much as before Biden took office. So there's problems there, and we can't forget about this. I know, talked about it with the issues of Ukraine. A lot of people are bringing this up, and it's very true. Is we can't, even though what happened in Ukraine is very important, we need to pay attention, and hopefully the Biden administration can allow for the sovereignty of Ukraine to let Ukraine have its sovereign voice in this world, and as well as NATO. We want to intercede, and ultimately for boldness from the Border Patrol agents to know how to navigate what's going on at the border. There are things happening that are not being reported right now that are very alarming, and the public needs to be made aware of these things. And these stories that you're hearing of, you know, police getting in shootouts with traffickers, human traffickers, drug traffickers, et cetera. That's only a small portion of what's really happening. That is known to report. And if the truth were to come out, Americans would be very alarmed at the realities of it. And these Border Patrol agents see it, they know it, but they feel kind of like with Obama, when under his presidency, being given potato guns when they're going up against AK-47s. They know their hands are tied behind their back, and it's a challenge for them because they're risking their lives every single day, and they're not being backed up by the Department of Homeland to be able to do their jobs and protect and save the border. Now, hopefully Texas can stand up, but ultimately they pray for boldness and wisdom for those Border Patrol agents, because they're very valuable resources and are needed at this time in this country. And there is something to be said about having sovereignty of this nation and protecting of our borders as we enter into a very, very, very contentious time coming towards the end of the year and later. All right, last thing I want to talk about is some economic issues. So I talked about before, wanted to give an update and then also give some historical perspective on what has happened before. So right now, the Federal Reserve is pointing towards, and we've been following this for a while, Secretary Powell has talked about how, our Fed Chair Powell has talked about how he's going to raise interest rates, starting to a 0.25%, starting in March, and potentially ramp it up. Okay, let's say they go with an extreme aggressive measure on this, and they start raising it 1 percentage point by the end of the year. That's still, that gets you at what, maybe 3.5-4% when inflation's at 7%, possibly higher. The fact that they're raising interest rates this small amount does nothing to curb back inflation. Because as the economy continues to spend and spend and spend, inflation could go higher and higher and higher. And then as you had supply shortages, people are going to continue to spend more on less things, so it's going to cause prices of things to go up even further, if that makes sense. So what should be happening, the Fed should be saying, is they should be raising interest rates 5, 6, 7, 8% to get above inflation, to really allow and incentivize people to want to save. And I point that out because a lot of the economic decision makers in this country look at savings in a minuscule light. I don't want to say a bad light, but they don't look at it as a rewarding prospect. And so when they raise interest rates and they're printing money, the whole goal is, their idea is to continue to allow the economy to spend, but then also hopefully control inflation. Like, this goes back several decades. The prospect of this is, when you play it out in reality, you're seeing what happens. Inflation eventually gets out of control. You can't control it. You got to bail out those people, which you saw in the 2007-8, 2009 housing crisis. You eventually have to bail people out. Otherwise, the economy would extremely crash. I say all that to say, okay, this is what's going to happen. It's not really the best news, but it's what's happening. And I want to point towards, and I want to say this, and I want to point towards some historical facts and measures of things that have been done from previous Treasury secretaries who, in the position of Janet Yellen, actually made decisions in that were not easy at the time, but they were the most beneficial. And I say that to say is, we need leaders who are going to be in these positions, who are going to have to understand the reality of the decisions being made, especially within the economic sector. And I focus on this because this is what causes people to shift votes, is depending on how their pocketbooks are done. They could care less sometimes about policy decisions, but if their pocketbook is being affected, then they're going to vote a certain way or not. And I want to bring up this name because this is, as I'm studying this stuff, I'm learning more and more about it. But under President Calvin Coolidge, you had Treasury Secretary by the name of Andrew Mellon. And what he focused on, which is much of the day, are taxes, economic growth, and inflation. And his philosophy, which is really the philosophy of Adam Smith, if you know that name, the author of The Wealth of Nations, which he was a very pro-capitalist free market system. And Mellon was an advocate of those type of policies. And I'm just going to point out this. Is his idea, and really any country who has been successful in their economics has stuck to these things. I'll blow it up for you here. There we go. His idea was to keep taxes as low as possible. Low tax benefit those with modest as well as high incomes. Basically, a rising tide lifts all boats. They produce strong growth. He was the American father of supply side philosophy, meaning he pushed for more of savings, which right now you're seeing the Fed, Janet Yellen, everybody push for more spending. Even Bush, we need to spend. That's the American goal. That's what it means to be American. Supply siders believe of high taxes hurt everyone, which they do, especially the poor. The tax rates are dynamic and have a dramatic effect on all of society. High taxes don't produce the desired result, a boom economy with lots of money pouring into government coffers. And this is what Mellon wrote. He said, the history of taxation shows that taxes, which are inherently excessive, are not paid. The high rates inevitably put pressure upon the taxpayer to withdraw his capital from productive businesses and invest it in tax-exempt securities. The reason that's important to understand this is, at the time when Calvin Coolidge was president, you had 12% unemployment, tax rates on the higher income earners upwards of 90%, 70%, etc. And so what they did in the Roaring Twenties, in the 1920s, is they lowered it. Lower taxes, incentivize people to produce, to save, to do things that the government is trying to do right now, where like they're trying to incentivize electronic vehicles. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I just think that the federal government should not be the ones doing it. And what these economic policies did was allow the private sector to, rather than hold on to it and try to put it in accounts where they didn't have to pay taxes, so the government couldn't get the money that they supposedly think they're going to get, which is why a lot of these policies, high tax policies that Bernie Sanders, AOC are pushing for, they don't ever work out. And literally the 1920s are proof of that. So you see this, and then in the 1930s, you see the complete opposite under FDR, where it's high taxes, it's government spending. And before FDR did all that, government officials and leaders understood the reason of, because of mistakes that they made in the past, they understood the reason of lowering taxes. Now, you take this forward, going forward a few decades under the Reagan administration, even JFK, even under his administration, he followed these same type of policies. And Reagan understood this because he listened to Milton Friedman, who was his one of his top economic advisors, who followed these same principles, and which is why you saw the booming Reagan economy, where you lower taxes and you allow the private sector to play itself out. And what happened was, is in the 1920s, the private sector corrected itself, whereas in the 1930s, the government covered for mistakes that the private sector made. So in a free market capitalistic system, the system and the government should work together to prevent a complete economic crash. Now, what happened is greed got in the way, and companies who were greedy were able to cover for it. And so you're seeing that right now is what happened in 2007, 2008, is these companies who are still making this literally the same exact decisions that caused the 2007, 2008 crisis are making the same ones today in the banking sector, brought on by unintended consequences from government decisions under the Clinton administration. And so I bring this up to show that there is a road out of the extreme high debt, not only that the U.S. federal government has, state and local municipality governments have, but also we as consumers have. If you combine all that up, the number would probably make your heart stop for a second, because it would just be astronomical, and thinking about it would just bring on just this weight of pressure. But there is a way out, and there is wisdom out there that leaders right now aren't making the current decisions because they believe a certain philosophy. And what we need to understand as believers and intercessors, not only for this administration, but even for the future of America and teaching the next generation, is that, you know, sometimes we need to learn from history and honor those who have made decisions for the good and for the bad, of understanding, okay, look, we tried these philosophies. Let's honor the fact that we went down this road and it does not work. Put this country in the long-term standing of being in debt, and we need to get out of it. There are ways out of it. There are things that we can do to curb this bag. There are things that we can do that some presidents were trying to do. Some presidents were being harmful in it and trying to make America independent economically from oil to manufacturing certain things and pharmaceuticals, et cetera, which are now being seen as key things to, oh yeah, we should probably be doing that here in America, not in Mexico or China and whatever, because when you have a situation where you are totally dependent upon outside markets to provide you with basic necessities in a time like this, in a time of bad weather, whatever the case may be, your supply shortages run short, it's harmful to not only your nation, but the other nation as well, because they're not able to provide an income for their country. And so I know this is kind of deep, but I wanted to highlight that again. His name was Andrew Mellon. He was 1920s, a U.S. Treasury Secretary. So there are decisions that can be made to benefit people. A lot of times we forget because it's so long ago. I mean, obviously, I've hardly even heard that name before. I understood Calvin Coolidge was one of the presidents who made proper decisions on the economic side to allow us to get through the 1920s and the 1930s, presented with the same exact situation of high unemployment, indebtedness from the private sector. The government did the complete opposite and caused the Great Depression. And when you go back and study the Great Depression, we were actually about to come out of it until FDR got elected and made the decision that he did. And thankfully, if it weren't for World War II, it would have gone on longer. So I close with that. Let's continue to pray for Justice Breyer and the season that he has closing out. Pray for the Biden administration. on the deal and the talks with Iran on the Iran nuclear deal, and then also for boldness and wisdom for these Border Patrol agents to navigate the issues going on at the border, but then also to make the public aware of what's going on so that we understand the severity of the decisions being made by this administration, because the midterms are coming up right around the corner and people need to be aware of what's going on. So blessings to you all. I'll be back tomorrow for another morning briefing to close out the week. And don't forget, with all the news and everything going on, if I'm never on Facebook, know that it will always still be on Rumble, and I'll always put out the podcast on Podbean, Apple, Google Play, and Spotify as well. So blessings, and I will see you guys tomorrow.